Okay, Larry, it's time for the theme song.
Yeah, Bob. What do I do?
Let's see. I know, you play the guitar.
Bob, I don't have any hands.
Oh, you're right. Well, you play this.
I don't want to play that. I'll look silly.
Oh, come on. It'll be fun.
Nope, not gonna do it.
It's for the kids.
Oh, okay. But they better not laugh.
All right, better get on out there.
If you like to talk to tomatoes, if a squash can make you smile, if you like to waltz with potatoes, up and down the produce aisle.
Have we got a show for you?
Magic Tales, 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 Magic Tales.
Broccoli, celery, gotta be
Magic Tales.
Lima beans, collard greens, peachy keen.
Kids, I'm waiting for Larry. I've really missed him. He's been away at Danish immersion camp for the longest time.
Thanks. Have a nice day.
Surprise!
Is that it?
What, is what it?
Is anybody else gonna say surprise?
No, Larry. It's just me.
Oh. Well, you know, it's just that normally there's a big group of people who pop up and say surprise. At a surprise party.
Well, everybody else is getting ready for the show. Oh, and it's a great one, Larry. You're gonna love it. It's...
What's Velkommen Hejem, Larry?
It's Welcome Home, Larry, in Danish. You should know that.
How's that?
You just spent the last 3 months in Danish immersion camp.
Oh, yeah, well, I didn't exactly go to Danish immersion camp.
What?
Well, I did, kinda. I mean, I was there for a day. And then me and this kid, Bjorn, took a canoe ride out on a lake and got lost. We ended up at another camp.
What camp was that?
Overdone British Literary Adaptations Camp.
Over what?
Overdone British Literary Adaptations Camp.
But Larry, you were supposed to learn Danish. We were gonna do a show about a Danish trucker and his trusty pet monkey.
Like BJ and the Bear?
In Danish?
Sounds fun.
Yes! It does! Except now we can't do it, because you can't be Jorgen, because you don't know Danish!
Who's Jorgen?
The trucker!
Who's the monkey?
Well, it doesn't really matter now, does it? Oh, man! Now what am I gonna tell Chester?
Is that the monkey?
No! It's the kid we got the letter from that we were gonna do the show for!
Well, what's his problem?
Here, read this.
Dear Bob and Larry, some of the kids at school make fun of me. They call me names and tell me I'm no good at anything. What should I do? Oh, dear.
Oh, dear is right. The same thing happened to Jorgen and his monkey. But Jorgen decided to take a canoe ride and get lost at Overdone British Literary Adaptation Camp!
Hey, wait a minute. I read a story at camp that might be just what Chester needs. It's a classic of British literature called Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde.
Larry, isn't that story a little scary?
Well, sure, if you tell it that way. But if you change things around a little bit, I think we'd have a story Chester would enjoy. Chester, get ready for Dr. Jiggle and Mr. Sly.
Huh?
Roll film!
If One dare listens, then one dare hears. A tale to rouse your secret fears. Tarry not, for the end draws nigh on Dr. Jiggle and Mr. Sly.
Mr. Butterbun.
There'll be no tea today, Pooh. There's trouble brewing.
There's no trouble brewing, sir. I just heated up some water in it.
Not the tea, Pooh, not the tea. It's that creature in the alley. There's something wrong with his appearance. Something displeasing. Something downright detestable.
Well, I watched him dance last night. He looks a little weird, but he's got some great moves.
That's where you're wrong, Pool. Don't let his fancy footwork fool you. Ah, and what's this? The monster is afoot in Dr. Jiggle's house. Quick, Pool, we've got to warn the doctor.
Okay.
Oh, Mr. Butterbun.
Dr. Jiggle, thank goodness you're all right.
Well, yeah, I...
Well, we've come to warn you. You've an intruder, a detestable disco-dancing villain ducked through your back door.
Oh, yeah, well, you must mean Mr. Sly.
Mr. Sly?
Oh, yeah, man, can that guy dance or what?
Yeah, didn't I tell you? That little thing he does with his hips?
Uh-huh.
He's gotta be the best dancer in the whole world.
What? You're in cahoots with that creature?
Well, yeah. I mean, you gotta like a guy who can dance like that, right?
Well, I suppose.
I know I could never dance like that. I mean, just look at me. I'm too jiggly.
Ever since I was a little boy in widely tailored pants, my only aspiration was to be a gourd who danced. But for what it's worth, my portly girth only served to make folks giggle. For the more I moved, the more I proved all I could do was jiggle. I want to dance. I want to groove. I need to feel the rush of the wind under my shoes. I want to dance.
What was I saying?
Barometer must be rising. Me joints are locking up.
Yep. I think Mr. Sly is great. On account of his non-jiggly, wonderful dancing and all, you guys would really like him. I know you would.
Look, Dr. Jiggle, maybe I've been a bit harsh about this Mr. Sly friend of yours. Perhaps I owe him an apology. Would you mind introducing us?
No. I'm afraid that's not possible. You see, he's real busy.
But
now, if you'll excuse me, gentlemen, I have work to do.
Gotta do doctor stuff.
Bye.
Good night.
Poor Dr. Jiggle. Something tells me he's in trouble, Pool. And I suspect it's no small fault of that new friend of his. I'm going to get to the bottom of this. If he be Mr. Sly, I shall be Mr. Sneak.
What?
The feet!
What?
Shh! It's him! Do you have it?
Yeah, I got it.
Good. Now, remember, you give Mr. Sly the invitation before he starts dancing. Once he finishes, we'll go back to my house and have a nice talk over tea. Then we'll see what he's got up his sleeve!
Got it.
Okay, go! Never mind.
What time is it?
It's 11:58. Mr. Sly will be out at any minute. Look, Pool, this may be the last chance we get. Nobody's seen or heard from Dr. Jiggle in 2 days. No more mamsy-pamsy pleasantries. When Sly comes out, we nab him. Pure and simple. Got it?
Dr. Jiggle!
Oh, good evening, gentlemen.
I trust you're well, Doctor.
I've been feeling a little woozy lately.
Look, Doctor, why don't you join us? We're about to watch your friend dance. It'll do you good to get outside and whip up your circulation. You flashy fiend! What have you done with the doctor? I said, what have you done with Dr. Jiggle? What? Those eyes. I know those eyes. Something so familiar. Could it be?
Taking dance lessons. All I ever wanted to do was dance, but I was afraid people would laugh at me for being so jiggly.
So you dressed up like that kooky creature so people wouldn't laugh at you?
And so people would like me. You gotta like a guy who can dance and not jiggle, right? But man, did that costume hurt. I think I bruised my spleen.
Dr. Jiggle. We've always liked you. Jiggle and all.
Really?
You can bet your wacky wig! And I think it's great you've been taking dancing lessons, but you don't need that silly spleen bruising get-up to dance. You're special just the way God made you.
Really?
Say, that little move you do with your hips, you mind showing a rusty old carrot how it's done?
I love that move. I've always loved that move.
But I can't do that.
Dr. Jiggle.
Oh, why not?
Great!
All right!
Oh, I can't wait to see it. It's gonna be splashed. Stand back. Give him room.
I can do it!
Oh, yeah.
I can do it!
You see, your jiggle. When you know God made you special, it doesn't matter what anyone else thinks. You can just be yourself.
Though your only aspiration was to be a gourd who danced.
What I never knew that I could do in widely tailored pants.
But for what it's worth, your portly girth doesn't make me wanna giggle.
Though dense when weighed, you're specially made.
We love our Dr. Jiggle. Your suspension, it suspends me over heights I've never known.
And your roll bar is to die for, by the way. I like your chrome.
You already said that.
Did I?
Yeah.
Oh.
Oh, you and me in our sport utility vehicles, cruising to 7-Eleven for a bag of Frito-Lays. Oh, you and me in our sport utility vehicles, we'll slam into four-wheel drive. A dozen eggs.
And if there ever was a snow, you know,
a really, really deep snow.
And if everyone was stuck but us,
we'd be the ones that stuck.
Then we could be the heroes.
Oh, we could be the heroes.
Yeah, we would be the heroes.
Who would push them and pull them?
I like your car.
I like yours too.
Periwinkle.
It's baby blue.
How's it handle?
Like a dream.
How about poppy?
And then ice cream.
Oh, you and me in our sport utility vehicles, cruising to Dunkin' Donuts for a cup of steaming joe. For a scoop of Rocky Road.
And if we ever go camping, you know,
haven't been but one day, I'll go.
And we find a ranger stuck in a ditch,
a nice ranger in a deep ditch.
Then we could be the heroes.
Oh, we could be the heroes.
Yeah, we would be.
Is it a Jeep? It's my sport utility vehicle.
And now, a Snoodle's Tale. Far, far away in the land of galoots, where the bigglebag trees bear their bigglebag fruits, and far lily bushes all blossom in yellow, and thimbuddle plants squirt snooberry jello. Here where the mountains of Rocky Magoo rise high o'er the meadows of Gilda Manju, where sunsets are painted with purple and blue, you'll find a small town, not much bigger than you. Welcome to Snoodleburg, home of the Snoodles. A curious folk who eat pancakes with noodles and spend half their days making sketches and doodles and cutting their hair into shapes like French poodles. Now, right in the heart of this curious town is a curious building, the tallest around. With a clock at its top and a chute at its bottom, 'tis pink in the spring and turns red in the autumn. But weirder by far than its color or height is what happens there every fourth Tuesday night. As strange as it seems, it has been demonstrated that snoodles aren't born, but rather created. Every fourth Tuesday at 9:15, the tower will shimmy and rattle and whine, and as the town nibbles on Bigglebang fruit, a shiny young snoodle will drop from the chute. That's where they come from, though no one knows why, nor who could have built the great tower so high. These mysteries of life befuddle most snoodles, who'd much rather focus on pancakes and noodles and cutting their hair into shapes like French poodles. Yes, most found the tower too noisy and strange, until one small snoodle made all of that change. This little snoodle was much like the others. He came without siblings, no sisters or brothers. He came without money, a mom or a dad. The pack on his back was all that he had.
This is peculiar,
the little guy said.
I came from a chute and I fell on my head? What do I look like? What am I for?
He pondered those questions and then thought of more.
Checking my bag is a good place to start.
He pulled out some paints.
Maybe I'm good at art.
The next thing he found was a snoodle kazoo.
Hey, what do you know? I can make music too.
Then back on his pack, he pulled a small string, and out from the sides popped two little wings.
Amazing!
He said with a gleam in his eye.
I can paint, play kazoo, and now I can fly. Wait till the others see all the great things I can do with my paints, my kazoo, and my wings.
So he packed up his paints and his snoodle kazoo, and he hopped off to show them all what he could do. There from the top of a short, stubby wall, the big snoodles heard the new small snoodle call.
Come watch me, you guys, as I head for the sky.
He straightened his wings with a gleam in his eye. Then he jumped, and he flapped like the red-snooted finches that fly from the plains to the peak of Mount Ginches. His flight, unlike theirs, covered only 12 inches.
You call that flying?
You think you're a bird? We've never seen anything quite so absurd.
The old snoodle snorted. He sniggered. He shook.
I'll paint you a picture to show how you looked.
The brushstrokes were skillful. The colors were coolish. The story they told made the young one feel foolish.
Take it from us,
said a snoodle named Lou.
Flying just isn't what you're meant to do.
The young snoodle drooped. He felt his heart sag. The painting the old snoodle placed in his bag.
Carry this with you,
the old snoodle said.
So visions of flying don't go to your head.
The weight on his back was as heavy as lead. So under the weight of the picture he bore, he hobbled along feeling lonely and sore. Till up far ahead on a bench near the tower, he spied a bright bundle of far lily flowers. His heart started lifting.
What beautiful things!
Then he remembered.
I've got more than wings.
So quickly, he dug the paints out of his pack and hoped that with art, maybe he'd have the knack.
I did it!
He yelled to the snoodles in town, then held up his picture as they gathered round.
You did it all right!
Said the snoodles, replying.
You showed you're no better at painting than flying.
Then one of them laughed, and while eating a waffle, painted a picture that made him feel awful.
You're puny.
You're silly.
You're not all that smart. You can't use your wings, and you're no good at art.
That picture, too, was placed in his pack, and made his heart slump just as low as his back.
I'm ugly, I'm foolish, and so very small. I don't think I should be with Snoodles at all.
And so he decided to get out of town. His wings hung so low that they dragged on the ground. He walked past the tower and out of the city. He walked through the fields and thought,
"My, this is pretty. The far lily bushes all blooming in yellow, and thimbiddle plants squirting snowberry jello. I might like it here,"
said the small snoodle fellow. Then feeling some warmth coming back to his chest, he thought he would sit for a moment and rest. But try as he might to sit down with grace, the weight on his back knocked him flat on his face.
"Ha! That's a who!"
said a voice from behind. A farmer stood up with a thimbuddle vine.
"Why, you need a picture, my Snoodleberg bud, lest you forget how you look in the mud."
And so in an instant, the picture was done and placed in his backpack, which now weighed a ton. The poor Snoodle struggled. He wobbled. He groaned. He stood to his feet and he said with a moan,
"Is there anywhere I can be truly alone?"
Just then overhead flew two red snootered finches, winging their way toward the peak of Mount Ginches.
"I see,"
said the Snoodle.
"Then that's what I'll do. The home for those finches will be my home too."
So painfully, struggling under his pack, the small Snoodle inched up the big mountain's back. He crawled over boulders in rain and in lightning. He trudged on and on, though the journey was frightening. Till finally on Sunday, at 2:15, he spied all the meadows of Gilda Manju and realized he was on top of Mount Ginches, alone with the wind and his thoughts and the finches. He thought of the Snoodles. He thought of the tower. He thought of the bell that would chime on the hour. He thought of his pack and his very long walk. He thought it so loudly, he heard his thoughts talk.
"Hello,"
said his thoughts.
"You've made quite a climb."
"That voice,"
he remarked,
"doesn't sound much like mine."
Then he turned and he noticed he wasn't alone, for a man stood behind, near a cave in the stone. He looked like a Snoodle, though quite a bit bigger.
"Maybe a giant,"
the small Snoodle figured.
"I'm going,"
the Snoodle boy said with a huff.
"And don't paint a picture, I've got quite enough."
"But first, come inside,"
the man said.
"Have some tea. I'm so very pleased that you're visiting me."
The Snoodle boy stopped, though he'd only gone inches, and stared at the stranger he'd found on Mount Ginches. He didn't seem angry. In fact, he looked kind. The poor little boy was confused.
"Are you blind? I'm puny. I'm silly. I'm not all that smart. I can't use my wings, and I'm no good at art."
The stranger leaned down with a pain in his heart.
"Who told you these things?"
he asked.
"How do you know?"
"These pictures I have in my pack tell me so."
The small Snoodle sniffled and started to go.
"First, if you please, let me look at this art that makes your pack heavy and weighs down your heart."
Then picture by picture, he unpacked the bag that bent the poor Snoodle and made his wings sag.
"Dear boy,"
said the man,
"these look nothing like you."
Then into the fire the pictures he threw. He rose from his chair, saying,
"Wait there, you'll see that what you need most is a picture from me."
The Snoodle sat patiently, sipping his tea. Then from a room in the back he returned and said,
"Dear little Snoodle, it's time that you learned what you really look like."
And he threw off the sheet. And what the boy saw warmed him right to his feet. The boy in the portrait looked older and strong, with wings on his back that were sturdy and long, and a look in his eye, both courageous and free.
"Sir?"
asked the boy.
"Are you saying that's me? I like to believe it, but sir, I'm afraid to."
"But I know who you are,"
the man said.
for I made you. I built the tower and set it in motion. I planted the meadow, put fish in the ocean. And I feed the finches, though most noodles doubt it. Not one of them falls that I don't know about it. I've seen you fall down in the mud and the goo. I've seen all you've done and all you will do. I gave you your pack and your paints and your wings. I chose them for you. They're your special things. The Snoodle Kazoo is so you can sing about colors in autumn or flowers in spring. I gave you your brushes in hopes that you'd see how using them you could make pictures for me. Most of the Snoodles,
the old one said sadly,
just use their paints to make others feel badly.
The young Snoodle pondered the things he'd been told, then wondering something, grew suddenly bold.
But sir, if you made this incredible land, can't you make Snoodles obey your command?
The big one smiled warmly, then said to the small,
a gift that's demanded is no gift at all.
With that, the small Snoodle reached into his pack and pulled out the picture he'd made 10 miles back.
They're far lilies, sir, from over the bridge.
The old one beamed bright and said,
that's for my fridge.
After the small Snoodle's picture was hung, the old one bent down to the face of the young. He said,
here's what you look like. Here's how I see you. Keep this in your pack and you'll find it will free you from all of the pictures and all of the lies that others made up just to cut down your size. And lastly, your wings. You know what they're for. But not just to fly, son. I want you to soar.
But, sir,
said the Snoodle,
how can I fly? This picture's so big, I won't get very high.
But this picture's special. It's bigger, it's brighter. Carry it close, and I think you'll feel lighter.
As soon as he heard it, the Snoodle looked down and noticed that he was an inch off the ground. He laughed and he leaped and he flew from the cave, feeling now older and stronger and brave. And he flew through the clouds and he flew with the finches. He soared up and down round the peak of Mount Ginches. He flew over far lily bushes in yellow and thimbuttle plants squirting snowberry jello. He flew over biggle bag trees and their fruits in big lazy loops or the land of galoots. Then hurried back home to the center of town where the Snoodles all stood with their wings on the ground. And starting precisely at 2:15, he told them the story that I just told you.
Bob, did you make that story up yourself?
Well,
That was great! You would have fit in great at camp.
Well, I did go to overused literary emulation camp last summer.
Oh, yeah! That's right across the road! There was something about that story, though, that made me want to eat green ham.
Anyway, we're over here by QWERTY to talk about what we learned today.
And so what we have learned applies to our lives today. God has a lot to say in his book.
And eggs. Eggs, too.
What?
You see, we know that God's word is for everyone. Now that our song is done, we'll take a look.
You see, the little Snoodle got weighed down by the pictures of him the others were painting. Just like the names people call us make us feel terrible. But just like the Snoodles, we have a creator. God made us! And when we know what he thinks of us and how he sees us, it doesn't matter what anyone else says.
QWERTY, can you tell us what the Bible says about us? I praise you because I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Psalm 139:14.
So, Chester, the kids at school can only see the way you look right now. But God sees you the way you're meant to be. You're stronger, smarter, and braver than you think. And God has given you amazing gifts. You can use your gifts to make the people around you feel better and to do things for God that'll end up on his fridge. Do you know why?
Oh, I think I know, Bob. Because God made you special, and he loves you very much.
Yep, and he wants you to paint, and he wants you to sing, and he wants you to soar.
And maybe even dance.
Well, say goodnight, Larry.
Farvel! That's Danish for goodbye. Learn that one before the canoe ride.
Right. And welcome to VeggieTales. I'm Bob the Tomato.
And I'm Larry the Cucumber.
And we're here to answer your questions.
Yep.
I bet you're wondering why Larry has a shoe on his head.
Yeah, Bob. Why do I have a shoe on my head?
Well, I got a letter today from Latasha Robbins of Savannah, Georgia. Latasha wants to know what loving your neighbor really means.
And that's why I have a shoe on my head?
Yes. No. Well, kind of.
Help me out here, Bob.
You see, I'm about to tell Latasha the story of Flibber Olue. And in that story, you, Larry, have a shoe on your head.
Oh, it's all so clear now. Hurry up and tell the story. My head's starting to sweat.
Okay, here goes. The sun always shone on the mountains of Fibble. The wind and the rains never came. To call the place beautiful, no one would quibble, though hard on the feet, they'd exclaim.
But high in those hills, past the rocks and the rubble, so high that the clouds were below, sat two tiny towns that were nothing but trouble. As you listen, you'll see that it's so. Now the town to the west that thought it was best bore the name Flibberaloo, where the women and men since 1710 have worn on their heads one large shoe. Now in town number two, one big shoe wouldn't do. So the people of Jibberty Lot would look down and bellow at shoe-headed fellows and place on their own heads a pot.
Mine's really more of a kettle.
For days without end, these two neighbors would bicker as to whose headgear was best, and the shoes and the pots would fly ever thicker from morning to night without rest. But not all of the people who lived in these cities were angry and bitter and vile. A few would write poems and sing happy ditties and greet all their friends with a smile. One Flibbian fellow, who hated to fight, tried hard not to act like a mobster. While pots crashed around him from morning till night, he'd just play with his pet wind-up lobster. They kept to themselves, and they'd talk, until one day he said,
"Hey, let's go for a walk. I'm tired of lying around like a squid. I want to go out there."
So that's what he did. The shoe-headed boy and his blue plastic friend walked out of their town and began to descend to the dark, rocky valley between the two cities, away from his friends and their lighthearted ditties.
La-la-la. La-la-la.
"Hey, this is swell,"
he said.
"Gosh, this is fun. It's great that my lobster can get out and run."
But neither the toy nor the boy with the shoe could see the disaster about to ensue. For up in the rocks, hidden just out of sight, were six beady eyes filled with anger and spite. Six beady eyes watched our hero meander, two shifty crooks and their ruthless commander.
"Oh, look, what good fortune,"
the nasty one said.
"Here comes a poor fool with a shoe on his head.
I bet he's got money.
I bet he's got gold or maybe some jewelry he'd like us to hold.
Whatever the booty, I think I could stand it. Why, that's what I live for. That's why I'm a bandit."
And then they attacked him from under their rock. First they knocked off his shoe, then they knocked off his sock. But the thing they did next was extremely unfunny. Why, they shook him so hard that he dropped his milk money.
"Hey!"
he protested.
"I don't like your ilk. How will I go strong if I don't drink my milk?"
But they didn't care. They'd accomplished their goal. So they put our friend down, stuck his head in a hole, and walked off with his money, every last nickel, then yelled back as they left,
"See you around, silly pickle!"
I'm a cucumber.
Then he said with a moan,
"Well, I guess I'm alone."
But this was a loneliness he'd never known. His friends were far off and his lobster was missing. The sound he could hear was just the wind hissing.
"Hello? Hello?"
Things looked pretty grim for our Flibbian buddy. His head in a hole, his shoe bent and muddy. But then, were those footsteps? Oh, could it be true? Along came the mayor of Flibberaloo. Of anyone, surely he'd help the poor soul.
"Hello,"
said the boy with his head in a hole.
"I seem to have fallen. I seem to be stuck. But now that you're here, well, I guess I'm in luck."
"Oh, dear,"
said the mayor, observing the shoe.
"A fellow in need. And he's Flibbian, too. Young man, I have noticed your dire situation, and please rest assured that I share your frustration. But how can I put this? What can I say? Maybe you understand better this way."
Is that music?
"I'm busy, busy, dreadfully busy. You've no idea what I have to do. Busy, busy, shockingly busy. Much, much too busy for you."
"Oh, I see."
As soon as the mayor had finished his song, a Flibbian doctor came strolling along.
"Out of my way,"
she said, starting to slide.
"If you and your pickle would please step aside. I'm very important. I can't stand and chat."
"Well, that's not my pickle. I found him like that. Besides, it so happens I'm noteworthy too. Why, I am the mayor of Flibberaloo."
I'm a cucumber."
"I see,"
said the doctor.
"Then you'll understand without an appointment I can't lend a hand. They're folks with bronchitis, they're kids with the flu,"
she said to the mayor of Flibberaloo.
"If I'm not mistaken, you're quite busy too."
Well, they talked about schedules, compared daily planners, till finally a voice said,
"Please pardon my manners. I don't mean to bug you. I see that you're busy, but being inverted has made me quite dizzy."
The two other Phlebeans paused for a while. They looked at each other, then said with a smile,
"We're busy, busy, dreadfully busy. You've no idea what we have to do. Busy, busy, shockingly busy. Much, much too busy for you. 'Cause we're busy, busy, frightfully busy. More than a bumblebee, more than an ant. Busy, busy, horribly busy. We love to help, but we can't."
Ha-ha! Oh, it was just dreadful. How could they desert their Phlebean friend with his head in the dirt?
"That's it, then. I'm finished. I'll die here down under. If they would not help me, then who would?"
he wondered. But wait, someone else on the road overhead. Would they help a friend beaten up, left for dead? Oh, look, on his head, not a shoe but a pot. Why, this little guy was from Jibberdy Lot. Would he help a Phlebean? Certainly not. The boy with the pot saw our friend with the shoe.
"Oh, look,"
he exclaimed.
"He's from Flibberaloo. Why, they think we're garbage. They pelt us with shoes. Why should I care if he's beaten and bruised? But out here in the wild, his chances are slim. If I was in need, would I want help from him?"
He looked at our friend, and he looked at the shoe. And then in his heart, he knew what to do.
"He may be Phlebean, that's plain to see. But God made him special, just like he made me."
So we got him unstuck, and he picked up his shoe. And together, they walked back to Flibberaloo, out of the valley and back into town, where he stayed by his side till the doctor was found.
"Oh, my,"
said the doctor.
"He's wearing a pot. The little one there is from Jibberdy Lot. You saved this fellow? You pulled him through it? I don't understand. Tell me, why did you do it?"
"He has a shoe and I have a pot, but when we look deeper, there's more that we've got. God made us special, and now I can see. If you're special to him, then you're special to me. Love your neighbor. When someone helps you, then you'll understand. When you love your neighbor, loving means lending a hand.
If you see someone who's hurt or in need, maybe it's time to perform a good deed. And when you finish, you'll find that it's true. When you make them feel better, you'll feel better too.
Here, let me help you."
"Thank you."
"Oh,
love your neighbor.
When someone helps you, then you'll understand.
When you love your neighbor, loving means
lending a hand."
So the boy with the pot gave the doctor some money to pay for the cucumber's bill. And the mayor cried out with his eyes moist and runny,
"I'm touched by his act of goodwill. If this little guy can take care of his brother when he lives in one town and he in the other, why can't we all try to help one another? And love will surround our fair hill."
Now if you visit the mountains of Fibble, you won't see a shoe or a pot. Instead, they throw flowers and candy to nibble. I bet that you'd like it a lot.